This is Tina Young conducting an interview with Marvin Maley at the Southwestern Illinois Extension Campus in Granite City, Illinois. We're conducting the interview in the library. It's November 1st, 2001. Okay, well, the first question I'd like to ask you would be, what is your connection to Lincoln Place?
I was actually born and raised in Granite City, and my grandparents settled in Lincoln Place when they came from Europe. My grandfather settled there in 1916 when he left Macedonia, which actually Macedonia is occupied now by the Greeks. Mm. And it's part of northern Greece. And my grandfather arrived there. His brother was there before him, arrived in the neighborhood. His father was there also. His father would go to Lincoln Place, would work in the factories, you know, in the neighborhood, and then would go back to Macedonia, would stay in Lincoln Place maybe 3 years or so, which was typical for a lot of the Macedonian men in the early years. They would leave Macedonia because the ground was really bad, and they didn't have a lot of farming, and there wasn't a lot of work there. And at that time, when my great-grandfather came, it was ruled by the Turks. So they would work there, they would leave, you know, get on the boat, they would leave, they would arrive in Lincoln Place, basically. They would work in the factories for about 3 years, and then they would return back to Macedonia with their money to feed their family, build houses. And that was kind of a way of life with the Macedonians in the early years. I would say from about 1890s maybe until about 1910. And then my grandmother came to America in 1921, December, and she arrived in Madison, Illinois. Then when she married my grandfather, they actually moved to Lincoln Place. My grandfather had a grocery store in Lincoln Place.
He already had that business established before he married your grandmother?
Yes, he did. Actually, when he arrived in Lincoln Place, he worked. He had several different types of jobs. And then he and one of his friends from the same village, John Kirchhoff was his name, they opened up this grocery store together, and it was called Kirchhoff-Lovachev, I think. And there was a falling out between the two, and then the business was basically, I don't know if it was dissolved or if Mr. Kirchhoff kept the business, and my grandfather started working on a farm and started doing other things. And then later on, I don't know how many years exactly after that, my mother and my grandfather basically opened up the business again, and her brother was involved too, but I think he was in the Army at the time, I'm not sure.
What was your grandfather's surname?
My grandfather's name in Europe was Luka Lovachev. Luka was his first name, Lovachev was the last name. And
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but could you spell that?
Sure. L-U-K-A L-O-V-A-C-H-E-V. And when the Greeks came into power in 1913 in Macedonia, they changed his name to Luka Lovacis. And so it's L-O-V-A-C-H-I-S. They were forced to take Greek names. And when he came to America then, he took on the typical ending on his last name was E-F-F or O-F-F, which most of the Macedonians and the Bulgarians, the ending that they were given here in the United States, instead of a V, they were putting E-F-F or O-F-F, so then it was changed to Lovachev. So L-O-V-A-C-H-E-F-F.
Okay.
And Lewis, of course, was his first name then.
And I made a silly mistake at the very beginning of this tape. I need you to spell, to state and spell your name.
Okay. My name is Marvin, M-A-R-V-I-N, and my last name is Maley, M-O-E-H-L-E.
Okay.
And my name, I'm a junior. My father has the same name. My father's of German background.
Okay, well, thank you for doing that because I
sure
need to know the spelling of the name for the record, but... Okay, so your family owned a grocery store.
Correct.
Were there a lot of businesses in Lincoln Place at the time?
Actually, when I was a small kid, we had Louis Market, which was, you know, our grocery store. Across the street, there was Vartan's Market, which was Nellie Vartan was the name of the lady who owned that. She was an Armenian woman, and I remember her mother was quite an old lady. She used to stay in the grocery store also, and she'd wait on customers. Nellie would wait on customers, and her mother would just kind of sit there and talk, make small talk to people. And down the street there was the Stoyanovs, which the Stoyanovs were also Macedonians, and They had real heavy accents. I remember I used to go into their grocery store because, I don't know, I always thought they had the best candy there. I loved their candy, and they were nice people. They were very nice to us. They didn't have any kids, and I remember I was pretty young, probably in the 1960s, I guess, at the time. The Stoyanovs, Mary and Chris Stoyanov was their name. They would sell watermelon by the slice. I also remember that. And they, when they got really old, they decided to give up the grocery store, and they moved, I think, somewhere to the, in the Ozarks, but I'm not sure.
What did you say their first names were?
Chris and Mary Stoyanov.
Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Did they make their own candy?
No, they didn't. It was store-bought candy, but it was the old-fashioned type of candy that you used to get in the earlier days.
What other kind of businesses did they have?
There was Blubby's or Simon's, which was a billiard place. And this was when I was small. Before I was born, there were a lot more businesses. But I remember there were Simon's. The Abadesian Cleaners were also down the street. Later on, probably in the 1970s, Blubby was his nickname. Simon, I guess, was his first name. I'm not sure. Anyway, his sister Nellie opened up a dress shop next to his business. But that actual business in the early 1900s was actually a Macedonian coffee house called Bitola, I believe, coffee house.
How would that be spelled?
Bitola. And I have a picture of it. It's written on the window in Cyrillic, which is like the Russian alphabet. On that, I have a lot of tape recordings of older people explaining to me what exactly was in Lincoln Place in the early 1900s. And basically on that street, which was called Pacific Avenue, it wasn't called Niedringhaus Avenue, it was called Pacific Avenue in the early days, were mostly coffee houses, and every village had their own coffee house. And so you had, Kafana Bitola, or the coffee house for the people that came from the town of Bitola. Had that. They had another one that was for the people from, like, from the different villages, from Dumbini, from Smutadish, from, all the different villages had their own coffee house. And the coffee houses were, only men were allowed to go in the coffee houses. The women were not allowed to go in there. It was a very much segregated type of a culture within the Macedonians.
Did they do anything special to the coffee? Was it a special type of coffee, or did they just use whatever commercial coffee was available and make it their own?
No, actually it was Turkish coffee is what they would make, and they would make it in a little bitty copper pan. The Armenians would make this coffee too. I'm sure that it was probably brought, we were ruled by the Ottoman Empire, by the Turks, and so I'm sure it was brought from the Turks, and we even call it Turkish coffee whenever we talk about it. They would also sell candy in those shops. I used to go a lot of times and tape record the old men in the coffee house. But the last coffee house that existed was in Madison, Illinois. And it was owned by a group of maybe five old Macedonian men would get together. And they were running this coffee house. So I know about the coffee house and the tradition that's involved in the coffee house. Women didn't go into the coffee house. It was strictly a place where men would go. They would smoke, they would play cards, they would talk politics and talk about, their life and things like that.
Did people in the neighborhood run businesses out of their house to make extra money?
Not really, not that I knew of. People in the neighborhood would help each other a lot. I remember, someone was known to make, a good sausage or this or that. Or the Hungarians were especially, they had smokehouses behind their house. And in the smokehouse they would make, it was a summer kitchen basically in a smokehouse. And they would make sausage. They would make all kinds of Hungarian pastries and delicacies. Hungarians were very good. Armenians were also good for making sweet pastries, paklava. Baklava. Macedonians make baklava as well. We have a lot of things in common, even though we didn't have languages in common. For instance, the Macedonians would speak Macedonian, the Macedonians Bulgarians basically speak the same language. The Armenians spoke Armenian, which is totally different. The Hungarians spoke Hungarian. Customs and traditions were different, but we did still have a bond that kind of made us together and unified us all. I think the fact that maybe we were all immigrants, our children or grandchildren of immigrants.
Did it have anything to do perhaps with location outside of Granite City and not being part of a town that kind of, it's a neighborhood, but it's almost like a town in and of itself almost, outside of Granite City? Was it an outsider insider kind of thing as well?
I think so, because I remember when I was little, West Granite people now consider Lincoln Place part of West Granite, but we never did. We were always from Lincoln Place. We were proud that we were from Lincoln Place. We really didn't have much to do with the other kids, other than going to school with them. We really didn't have a lot to do with them. Lincoln Place now is full of more American, you know, kids, Americanized, I should say, Anglo type of kids from East, Western Europe, as opposed to Eastern Europe and, you know, the Middle East. And they don't have the old traditions and customs like we once did. And it's the tracks, basically, where the railroad tracks are going downtown. You know, from the tracks toward the Army Depot was considered Lincoln Place to the Army Depot. And then I think it is West 22nd Street, I believe, from West 22nd Street till the end of, I don't know what it's called, St. Louis Avenue, or I don't know. Anyway, the factory basically starts there. So that's Lincoln Place. It was kind of a small, all the streets had names, you know, Spruce, Poplar, Maple. We lived actually on Maple Street.
Did the neighborhood have separate activities, like festivities, I should say, neighborhood get-togethers, where the whole neighborhood would get together, or?
Actually, you know what, the neighborhood was very, I used to go around with the kids and I would play, you know, with all the little neighborhood kids and things like that. As far as the festival, I don't think we really had a festival. In the summertime, we had the Lincoln Place Community Center, and, you know, we would play, we'd have activities there. I remember, I think you had to be 13 in order to play, you know, pool, and, well, I really wanted to be 13 so I could play pool, like all the older kids, and when I was 13 years old, I think they took the pool table out or something like that, so either that was torn up, or I forgot, but we used to go, there was a swimming pool, we used to swim there, and it was a nice neighborhood. The people were always really friendly. I remember a lot of, you learned a lot about the different cultures, you know, being, you know, raised as a Macedonian, you know. I would go, like, I had a friend that was Mexican, and his grandmother, Jessie Costello, used to make tortillas on top of her stove, and she was just a happy woman, and she would, you know, smear them with butter and put a little salt on them, and I loved those things. And then I remember other people, like the Veras family. They were Hungarian, and I used to go, and Emma Veras, who actually married a Hungarian, she would make the best potato soup, and she just had all kinds of things that I would eat a lot of times there. Her son was Johnny Veras, was one of my friends. And I had a lot of different friends. We had another family, the Larners, and I was very good with their son, Greg Larner. And I believe that their grandmother was, I think, Czech or Slovak or something. I'm not really sure. But the family was considered American. They were kind of the Leave It to Beaver type, you know, the very clean, nice family. And I remember that they really kind of stuck out in the neighborhood because they weren't a part of the neighborhood, but yet we learned from them and they learned from us, and it was kind of one of the first American type people that kind of came in the neighborhood.
Mm.
So as far as festivals, though, our celebrations, we, you know, every day was kind of a celebration in the neighborhood, you know, because you would learn from each other, and then you had the community center where people would come together and have different activities and things like that.
Were there people in the neighborhood that kept folk traditions or crafts alive, or would practice those or pass them down? Or
mm-hmm. Well, interesting is that my grandmother that I was raised by, Vasilika was her name, she would knit and crochet all day long, and she had, you know, she would make, you know, beautiful items. She was always making sweaters for us and traditional things that she had learned from her mother that was passed down from generation to generation. So as far as needlework, she really kept needlework alive. Tasa Georgiev, which was a woman who lived down the street from me, when she was young, she made a bridal costume, and it's very, very ornate, and she was really good at embroidery work. And I remember basically before she had died, she told her daughter that she wanted me to have her folk costume because I collect folk costumes, and she knew that I would preserve it and I would show it to people, and I would keep the idea that, you know, the traditions and the customs alive from Macedonia, and I would be proud to show her costume, would explain about the history. So whenever she died, her daughter called me up and I went and picked up the costume, and it's a treasure that I really value. And whenever she got older, she would do the same type of embroidery on pillowcases and things like that. of course, much larger, not as refined, but still it was, you know, very much traditional style. And her husband would make crosses. They were very religious. They would make crosses using matches and wooden matches, and had some really interesting, nice crafts.
When did you start collecting folk costumes?
I guess it was probably in the 1970s or 80s. I guess now I have about 13 trunks of folk costumes. They're all museum pieces. They're very old, with all the jewelry and the old jewelry.
Have you ever had an exhibit of those?
Oh, yes, I have exhibits all the time. I've had, you know, exhibits in, you know, Detroit, Michigan, in Ohio, several places, Adams Mark Hotel in St. Louis. I have exhibits and I talk about them all the time.
Are they mostly from Macedonia, or do you incorporate other, you know, because you were part of a neighborhood that was diverse, do you incorporate other?
Actually, I started collecting costumes strictly from Macedonia and Bulgaria, basically. And then I decided that I needed to add a few more different types, and I decided that I would, you know, I started collecting some Hungarian. Armenian costumes were really rare because of the Armenian massacre that happened in the early days. A lot of the costumes were destroyed, and what little you can find, you know, they're just very, very rare items. So I don't have any Armenian ones in my collection, but I do have Hungarian, Romanian, Macedonian, Bulgarian, and I also have the different, you know, costumes from Christians, costumes from Muslims, and costumes of, you know, gypsies, of Vlachs, which are different minority groups within the countries. So I'm very interested in my heritage and other people's. I think you have to know about other people's heritage as well, so you can compare your heritage, and it kind of, you know, makes you aware of what's good in the what's good with the culture, and what's different, I should say, what's not really good and bad, because every culture, you know, is good in a lot of ways.
And a lot of times it's good to have those things, I would imagine, because people lose touch with that, especially if they're not in a large community of the same ethnic background. You know, I would imagine that many people would lose these traditions. I mean, traditions change, of course, but I would imagine a lot of people lose traditions. Now, when we talked on the phone, you said that you had gone back to Macedonia. You had visited, and now, do you speak the language?
Yes, I was raised speaking Macedonian, and I speak Macedonian fluently. I speak, of course, our dialect of Macedonia. I also speak Bulgarian, proper Bulgarian. I used to translate for the courthouse. When I do the costume presentations, I only have them in English. I don't do them in, I don't speak in Macedonian when I do the costume presentations. But a lot of times I'll help immigrants, defectors. During communist times, there were a lot of people defecting, and I would translate for them. And still there are a lot of people coming, and I still translate for them and do things for them.
Now, how many times have you been to Macedonia?
Oh, yes, you asked me about my trips to Macedonia. I've traveled there, I believe it's 7 times now, and I helped 2 people to adopt babies in Macedonia. I was their translator, translated all the documents, and I just love going there, and I still have family back there. I still have a connection with the old country. And I go to the place where my grandparents were born, even though their villages are totally destroyed. The Greeks have totally destroyed their culture in the villages. But I go there. My grandmother's village has a church. All the houses are destroyed. There's only one church in the middle of the village. My grandfather's village, the houses are made from mud brick, and they're still there, still standing. But all the people have been chased out. Another interesting thing, one of the reasons why I speak Macedonian, I believe, is because in 1913, when the Greeks took over our part of Macedonia, it was forbidden for people forbidden for them to speak the Macedonian language. If you were caught speaking Macedonian by police, the police would stick a needle in your tongue. The second offense was that they would cut your tongue. So as a result, the kids were forced to go to Greek school, and the older people basically were hidden in the houses, so they didn't speak and didn't have any trouble with officials. And when my grandparents came here, one of their priorities were to teach their kids to speak Macedonian. And also we were raised with a very much a kind of a hatred toward Greeks, which, you know, they're good and they're bad people of all different nationalities. So, you know, now as an adult, I have to realize that you know, there's good and bad with all nationalities, so I don't have a strong hatred for Greeks.
Well, it's amazing to me when we talk about just the recent past, no matter, well, even what's going on today, that things like that happen.
Yes.
And because you're telling me, no, 1913, I'm thinking, well, that wasn't all that long ago, but, you know, so many bad things happen. And you're thinking, when are people going to learn? But, yeah, it's just fascinating that people had to go through that. But.
Yes. Well, when I went to Europe recently, I always have trouble, like, you know, even still to this day, when I go to my grandparents' area, you know, the Greeks are always, like, you know, harassing me. Why are you here? What are you doing here? You know, I tell them I'm an American. You know, my father's of German background. My name's, you know, very much an American name, Marvin Maley, you know. So you would think that I wouldn't have any problem, but they're real suspicious because of the mountainous, isolated area where my family's from. And I want to go there because that's where my heritage, that's where my roots are from, and I want to see if there's anything left that can that, you know, something there pulls me toward that land and toward my heritage. And I think it's important to go there and find out about your roots, your traditions, your customs. And when I go there's nothing there, and it's really sad. I took my mother there a few years ago, and basically when we entered my grandmother's village, she cried. And she just stood there and cried. You know, there's nothing you could do. So, sad.
So, I'm a little fuzzy on the particulars as far as what is Macedonia's status politically as related to Greece? What's going on there? Is it...
Okay, actually right now, Macedonia is a country that was ruled for 500 years by the Ottoman Empire. And just recently, Macedonia has become an independent country, which it was part of Yugoslavia. That's only a part of Macedonia. Macedonia also extended, was a large part of Greece, and also had a part in Bulgaria, and there were like 20 villages in Albania. But now, you know, the other parts have been conquered by the Greeks, by the Bulgarians. And so the Greeks basically have chased all these Slavic speakers out of northern Greece. And in the place of the Slavic speakers, all the Greeks that lived in Turkey and other countries, they brought back to Greece, or they brought to Greece. They actually were never born in Greece. And so the people that were sponge fishermen in Turkey, now they're settled in my grandparents' area, which is a mountainous, rocky area. And they're having a hard time, you know, surviving, a lot of them, because they were used to the sponge fishing. That's, you know, what they would make a living. And now they're put in on rocky mountains. So they weren't real happy there, but I guess they're getting used to it. And as a result, you know, basically the Slavic people in that part were basically chased out. A lot of them at that time left and came to America, like my grandmother. My grandmother arrived here in 1921. And basically the Greeks were, you know, destroying a lot of the village and forcing people to go to Greek school, and they were having a lot of trouble, so they chased basically her family out. And her father was living in Granite City, and basically sent passenger tickets, you know, mailed it to him and said, come to America because I know you're having a hard time there, and basically brought them to America instead of what he had hoped was to make money in America and return back to Macedonia and live there. But the situation, you know, basically changed, you know, turned around just to the opposite, where he sent them a ticket, and instead of living in Macedonia, they came to America to start a new life.
Well, I can imagine that one must have been really hard on families to have, you know, your main family member, your father, the patriarch, gone for 3 and 4 years at a time.
Mm-hmm.
That must have been horrible. So in a way, it's good that they were able to get together, but it's sad that they had to leave their homeland in order to do that.
Yes. It was kind of a tradition with the Macedonians, though, you know, this traveling, the men leaving the village. And, you know, my grandmother's village, by the way, in Macedonia is called Smrdish, which means stinky place. And one of the old ladies told me that the reason that the village has this name is that the men all left to go to work in the United States and other places. And whenever they returned, you know, which was, you know, years later, when they returned, they saw that all the women and the children were killed. That they don't know if they were Albanians or who actually went into the village and killed all the people, and the people started smelling. And so this is an old folk story, and it probably, you know, if it happened, I mean, I can't even guarantee that this happened, but this is the story of the name of the village. And so people would pass by and say, that place stinks, and which was basically translated to stinky place. So that's kind of how the name derived from the village. So it's again tells you about the people traveling back and forth, how the men went to work, and so it's something that's been going on for centuries. So it was kind of typical, traditional for them.
I would imagine traveling back there as often as you have, it had to have added so much to your understanding of your own culture outside of just a neighborhood context.
You know, it did.
Even though there's so many things that are missing, you know.
It really did. I think I really didn't realize how valuable my culture was until my grandparents died. Actually, my grandfather took me to Europe in 1973 after my grandmother died, and I took my culture for granted. I didn't really think it was really important. I was just something that I was, born into. And I think then when my grandmother died, I missed the folk songs that she sang, the cooking, the traditions, the customs. And then when I went there, it actually strengthened my interest in my culture when I learned about my roots and my heritage, going there and actually standing on the place where, my ancestors were born and seeing our native, area, that my ancestors were from. And it helped me, and it made me realize also how valuable the old neighborhood was and how these people really sacrificed their lives, their customs, and their ideas and came to a totally new place, bringing with them whatever they had. I asked my great aunt one time, I was talking with her, and I said, "So when you came with my grandmother to America, what did you bring?" And she said, "Well," she said, "we brought some feather pillows, we brought a few little blankets," she said. "We brought some cheese, we brought some olives." She said, "We didn't know what was going to be in America, if they had food, if they didn't have food." She said, "We didn't know what to expect." She said, "And we came to America," and she said, "We found things in America," but she said, "I missed my three-story house." She said, "I had a big, beautiful stone house in Europe." She said, "I was from a wealthy family." And she said, "When I came to America, I arrived on Madison Avenue," and she said, "I walked down Madison Avenue with my uncle, and I looked at the houses." She said, "They were wooden houses." And she said, "In Europe, our houses are made out of stone from the mountains." And she said, "I looked at the wooden houses, and I said to her, 'Now, I see.'" She said, "Look," she said, "now this is where you keep the animals, and these are wooden buildings here. Now, where are the houses where the people live?" And he said, "No, those are the houses for the people." And she said, "I started crying, and your grandmother started crying." And then she said, we went into a house, we saw chairs, we saw tables, and so then we felt a little more at home. She said, "Then through the years, I got used to it." So, the total difference, the culture change was just,
Well, sure, because, not every immigrant that came here because they absolutely wanted to, and they didn't come here they weren't poor to begin with. I mean, some of them were poor because they were forced out, mm-hmm. and then starting over, yeah.
Yes. My grandfather was from a poor family, actually, and he came here to make money, and he from the very beginning, I think he was more interested in staying in the United States. He was a young guy, 16 years old. But my grandmother basically didn't really want to come to America. I mean, she was content there. She was from a wealthy family. But because of political conditions, she was basically forced out. So I guess everyone comes for a different reason. I know a lot of the Hungarians in our old neighborhood are from the town of Hevesmegeb. And Hevesmegeb is pretty much a cultural center. And the people were very... Very cultured type of people. They were very religious Catholics. And that's another interesting thing in our old neighborhood is the churches. The first church, first Macedonian Bulgarian church in North and South America was in Lincoln Place. And it was right down the street from where I lived on Maple Street. We later sold it to the Armenians. And the Hungarians were Catholics. The Armenians were apostolic. The Macedonians and Bulgarians were Eastern Orthodox, and in the neighborhood there were some Baptist missionaries that came in and built a mission, and it was interesting, they built a mission, I think, because they basically thought all of us were atheists, but the Armenians were the people that, the Armenians basically were the first people to accept Christianity, and their Christian ideas and beliefs date really, really far back, so, they're the biggest Christians actually in the world, and yet the Baptists came in and built a missionary. But it was nice because we would go there and we'd play at the mission, and that's where a lot of us, would speak English and would learn other things, traditional type of American, you know, eat cookies and play different American games. And we were able to, basically it was a school for English for us. A lot of the neighborhood kids would go there, and we had a good time there.
Okay, let's see. In regard to keeping in touch with your cultural heritage, what, other than language, what did your parents, grandparents emphasize to you? Did they make anything more apparent than the other that you, this is important?
Actually, I think my grandmother was a great cook, and she would cook all kinds of Macedonian food. So food was a really important part of our cultural heritage, and I think it is with most ethnic groups. And I think also we were in a Macedonian folk dance group connected with the church, which was located actually in Madison, but all the Macedonian kids in the Lincoln-Pace neighborhood would go to the church in Madison. And we were with a choir that would sing folk songs, and we would do the traditional folk dances. On Sunday afternoons, there was an orchestra called the Bulgarian String Band, or the Bulgarian String Orchestra. They would play traditional folk music from all parts of Macedonia, but especially from this coastal region where we're from. And we learned the traditional dances. So we really, really kept in the heritage through the dances, through the music, through the folk songs, and the food, of course. And language, I think, you know, at home they would speak to us in Macedonian, but I think it was more of a convenience more than anything. I don't think that they realized that they were really protecting our heritage. I think it was important to them to keep the language up, but I think that it was more of a convenience thing for them because it was easier for them to speak Macedonian. And I know when I talk with my mother, there are certain words that I'll try and think of, and they'll come to me in Macedonian first. You know, just especially household words.
That's when you know the language.
Right. Different.
Did they have any kind of Macedonian publications that they read? Did they have, you know, was there anything like that?
Actually, Granite City, Illinois, actually Lincoln Place, had the largest Macedonian community in North and South America in the early 1900s. And at that time, there were two newspapers. Narodin Glas was the printing company, and there were two newspapers published daily. And they ceased publication in the 1950s. So, you know, I have a couple of the old copies of the almanacs, the newspapers, and but we really, you know, Bulgarian or Macedonian writing was never really forced on us. Or I was interested after my grandfather took me to Europe in 1973, because I met a girl in Macedonia, and the only way to write to her was to learn how to write. And so my grandfather taught me the alphabet. And it's a phonetic type of language. It's like Russian alphabet. It's real phonetic. So therefore, if you learn the alphabet, you can write anything. And there's no secret, you know, silent E's or anything like the American language. So as a result, when I basically learned the alphabet, after that I was able to write and correspond with this girl. And it made it a lot easier, and it was fun to do. And it really helped me with my language skill, because I learned writing with her, and then later on traveling to Europe, I learned the language much better, actually a more modern form of the language. So now I know all the old, or the modern words. So I basically kind of consider myself speaking the old traditional style language that I learned from my grandparents, but also I can speak the modern street language that the young kids use. And with all the different words, like for instance in Bulgaria, they'll say for dollars, they'll call them gushtari, which means lizard. And they have different certain words that mean certain things. And in order to be able to talk, like tell secrets.
So you have no problem connecting with Macedonians in Macedonia?
No, not at all.
That's neat. That's neat.
And I have a lot of friends there, and I, you know, communicate, and I help a lot of times the immigrants that are coming over now. I translate for them. I help them to find jobs or apartments or whatever I can for them.
Do they still have what's basically an exodus from that area then? Or is it now that they have an area now that's definitely Macedonia, mm-hmm. as opposed to in?
Well, the interesting thing is that there are really not many people coming from Macedonia proper at all. And there hasn't since the 19... I think one of the last families came probably in the 1970s, and they settled in Granite City. They didn't even settle in Lincoln Place. But a lot of people were coming from Bulgaria because Bulgaria was a communist country. The Bulgarian language and the Macedonian language, some people believe that it's one language. Some people believe it's two separate languages. I don't make much of a distinction, to be honest with you, because both of the languages, the language that was spoken in Macedonia at the time of my grandparents and the language that was spoken in Bulgaria have both followed different paths and have modernized. And so they're actually like, it's kind of like three different languages now. We have the Macedonian language, we have the Bulgarian language, and then we have the old traditional language that I was raised with. So I can speak basically modern Bulgarian language, I can speak old-style Macedonian, I can speak this pretty modern Macedonian language as well. So as far as people leaving, though, and coming here, Bulgaria was under communist rule for, I believe, 45 years, and so people were defecting from Bulgaria. And then after they defected, they would go, you know, we'd have a hearing, and we would find out, you know, if they needed any kind of medical help or anything like that. International Institute would sponsor these people. And they would call me up since I was a young kid and I spoke the language, and they would say, you know, can you please, you know, help us find out if, you know, who these people are, or do they need any kind of medical help? What do they eat? You know, what kind of work do they do? How can we find them, you know, a job? So anyway, I was like the mediator, and I was trying to help them on my own because I was interested, and it was a way for me to connect to my roots, you know, through these people. And the people now, there's something called an immigration lottery that I also help people with. People, basically the State Department every year has an immigration lottery. It takes place in October. And in October, you fill out an application. Anyone can fill this application out. And so many of these names are drawn from the lottery. And they're given basically green cards. You know, there are certain, you know, you have to be a high school graduate. You have to, you know, have someone to sponsor you. There are several different stipulations. But the people come here, and they usually, you know, I will sponsor them, or I have friends that sponsor them. And there's pretty large community of new people coming from Bulgaria. Most of them are settling, though, like in the Chesterfield area. And I'm still, you know, on a daily contact with these people. And, you know, I probably speak, you know, Bulgarian. I would say, you know, 50% of the words that come out of my mouth are Bulgarian. And 50% of English. Hmm. So.
Now, I was wondering, since your grandparents were the first ones to come here, and your family, I mean, yes. let's go back as far as your grandparents. So you're second generation born here. Are you still a citizen of, could you be easily become a citizen of Macedonia because of your heritage? How does that work?
You know, I don't think so. I don't think America recognizes dual citizenship, to be honest with you. In Macedonia, I was told that you can get a card saying that you are of Macedonian heritage and you would get certain discounts in hotels and things like that. In Bulgaria as well, I think that there's some kind of a card or citizenship or something that I can get saying that I'm Bulgarian because the Bulgarians believe that all Macedonians are Bulgarian. And, you know, depending on your political views, I mean, like I say, I'm not really interested in politics, so I can't, you know, for me, it's not doesn't really matter, you know, what who believes, or, you know, I mean, it's fine with me if they want to call me Bulgarian or if they want to call me Macedonian, or I don't care. But I was also told in Bulgaria that I could also get some kind of a card or something saying that I'm Bulgarian nationality, living in the United States, but I don't know, I really have never found a need to do this. I consider myself a minority group in the United States, but I consider myself a strong American as well. I'm a very patriotic American in a lot of ways. I'm proud of my, you know, being living in the United States and being part of this great culture. And I think one of the wonderful things about the United States is that you can be a minority in the United States and still, you know, people respect you and they're interested in, you know, your heritage and your past and things like, for instance, matter of fact, what we're doing right now, You know, the fact that someone's willing to tape record me to learn about my heritage, I think is great.
Okay, going back to the neighborhood. Now, I'm sure it was changing while you were growing up as a kid, your parents noticed, or that your grandparents noticed. How did it change for you as a kid? What were the changes that were happening to your neighborhood when you were a kid growing up to young adult?
Well, ethnic changes. I think as a little kid, you really don't realize it. Like I say, I really didn't understand the value of my heritage when I was a little kid. I just took it for granted. But it was always kind of interesting for me to, you know, I think I was probably interested in ethnography before I knew it, because I would see different people and what they would do, and I was really interested in going to other people's houses and just seeing how their houses were set up. For instance, you know, the Hungarians always had spotless kitchens upstairs. I mean, these people were, you know, always very, very, very clean. And they always had a kitchen upstairs, and we would deliver groceries to them. We would never go upstairs to the upstairs kitchen, because they always used their kitchen, which was in their basement. In the wintertime, they had another whole setup, you know, kitchen in the basement, and that's where they did all their cooking. The upstairs kitchen, I don't know, I guess it was just there for looks, but they had, you know, working stove in it, working refrigerator, everything, but they were never used. It was like very, very clean. They were very, very clean people. But I noticed how the neighborhood changed was that we were getting other influence from other people would start coming in, different, you know, American people. I, you know, really thought it was kind of strange whenever I would see a woman and she was over 60 and she didn't have an accent. That to me was kind of strange, because in the old neighborhood, all the ladies over 60 had accents. You know, I always thought it was strange when I went to Washington school and I would say to the different friends there, "So what are you?" Meaning, what nationality are you? And they would say, "Well, what do you mean, what am I? I'm a boy." You know, or "I'm a girl." And I would say, no, but where are you from? Where's your family from? And they would say, you know, "Well, I'm an Indian," or "I'm a, you know, so-and-so," or "I'm Irish," or "I'm German." And so that was kind of strange. And even though I had a grandmother who was of German background, and she was raised in a farm town in Iowa, still being raised in the old neighborhood, I kind of took for granted that all the ladies, the older ladies and older men, had accents. And that was kind of strange. And to see people with older people with blue eyes, I thought was kind of strange. You know, and you know, people started moving into the neighborhood, more Americans, and I think the old ladies started dying. You didn't have it Christmas time, you didn't have, you know, the people cooking pastries. You didn't smell, you know, all the different things when you were walking down the streets. The whole neighborhood had a whole aroma about it, which is really vivid in my mind. I mean, I could smell it as I'm talking to you, just walking down and smelling the different types of scents coming from the houses, and it was kind of an interesting, kind of a magical place.
Were people moving, well, other than, you know, dying of old age, were people eventually moving out of Lincoln Place, moving into, you know, Granite City, or out of, you know, just out of the area as a whole, or?
I think people were intermarrying. People were moving, you know, where the work took them, basically. A lot of people were just moving out of Granite City to bigger and nicer houses. The neighborhood was getting older, and it was just changing. And I think, you know, everything has a time. And I think that Lincoln Place basically, you know, that was the, how should I say, when I was small, that was the time, you know, when all the immigrants were there, and now they're all dead. People are moving out. Things are changing. I think it's only normal. I think, you know, things like that happen to ethnic neighborhoods. So, yeah, I think, you know, people just basically moved out. And that was it.
Okay, I'm